Drinking this album. Listen to the booze. I think it would pair well, if only for you, 'cause it's Album of Brews.
Hello,
it's
besties. Welcome back to Album of Brews, the stickiest My name is Sarah.
There's a little Taco Bell dog in the corner. My name is Zach.
And my name is Seamus.
And you're listening to the Barkiest Music Podcast. Today in the studio, we have Seamus from the Chicago band Disaster Kid. Welcome to the studio, Seamus.
Thank you for having
me. Seamus, welcome. For the folks listening along at home, will you tell them a little bit about you and what you do?
Yeah. I'm telling them about me and what I do.
Yeah, just give a little spiel.
Of course. I love spiels. My name's Seamus. I am the singer, songwriter, and guitar player in the band Disaster Kid. And I'm a music lover. I'm an art lover. I am a person of interest today.
Absolutely.
And a suspect at large.
We have to pause recording the podcast to do our routine background check.
There is a warrant out for your podcast arrest.
Let them come.
What was one of the first things that got you interested in music?
My family has always been like music influenced. I have a lot of like bluegrass musicians and folk musicians in my family. Yeah, so I don't know if that was like what drove me to music necessarily, but I have like lots of fond memories of like going to my uncle's like bluegrass shows and like watching them play. And like, I never, you know, like I am not the biggest fan of bluegrass music, but yeah. I think that was definitely like opened the window of like, oh, this is something you could do as a career.
Sure.
Yeah.
Bluegrass music is so like virtuosity, isn't it? Right. It's a lot of like intense playing.
Yeah, it's like almost kind of jazz.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people take solos and like, I think it's like an unwritten rule that you have to be a good singer as well as someone who can play an instrument.
Does bluegrass make you a good singer, or are you a good singer and go into bluegrass? Is it a chicken and the egg situation?
Oh.
Yeah. No one really knows for
no
sure.
No one knows for sure.
Jury's still out.
You can also check out the Nostalgic Rock band Disaster Kid. How did you guys come up with that slogan?
It felt right.
It does feel right.
Yeah.
Yeah. At first, when I first started, I was okay. So I think that it's hard as someone who makes music nowadays to put a label on, like, when the hardest question I get asked is like, oh, what does your music sound like?
Sure.
And I'm like, I don't know, indie. And so for a while I was tossing around like lullaby rock or basement lullaby rock, and eventually I just felt like nostalgia was really what I was going for in most of my songs, and then I just kind of landed on that.
Nice. Yeah. Nostalgia is kind of like usually like a gut feeling, I feel like, when I feel it. And so that's a good way to describe your music. It's very primal, if that's the right word.
Ooh.
For it.
Ooh.
Yeah. But yeah, so check out some Nostalgic Rock on Spotify or wherever you listen to your music. We are big fans of the single Marathon, and especially the Tommy Kessler remix.
Shout out.
It's been stuck in my head all
It's
day.
So good.
Sorry.
It's fantastic. Go listen to it right now and then continue this episode.
No, listen to it. We gotta keep the retention numbers up.
Get two different devices. Put Marathon on.
Simultaneously.
But then go check out Disaster Kid at Sub T March 10th at 6:30. They're at the Downstairs, and they are headlining with openers Emily the Band and Gosh Diggity. So that's going to be a stellar show.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yum, yum, yum. Yeah.
Get to the gig.
Get there.
Get there or be square.
Let's get into the drink in album.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Seamus, would you do the honor?
I would love to do the honors. The album is Slaughter Beach Dog's Quarantine Baby at the Moon Base. And the drink is this lovely red wine called Rough Day, which has a, what would you call this dog?
Like a bulldog?
Like a bulldog who...
He's got a good snout.
He's a big bulldog baby. He looks like he had a day.
Yeah.
He had a rough day.
Like, he came home and, like, his dog puked on the floor.
the dog reception layers of dogs.
It's like a Goofy Pluto situation.
Yeah, right. But I thought that wine would be, red wine specifically, would be a good pairing to this album because I feel like I think of red wine and I think of the places and people that I've had red wine with more often than any other drink that maybe I'm having. You know, like, beer is like, I could be anywhere. Yeah. Like, you know, I could drink an old style anywhere.
Yeah.
And I probably would have forgotten where I had it too. Uh-huh. But red wine is like such a, it's an emotional and like memorable thing to me. Like, you don't just get it for anyone or any occasion. Yeah. And I feel like this album has a lot of places and people involved in it.
Yeah.
That really seem like, you know, it is set a scene the way that red wine sometimes does.
I like that. It's a bunch of little vignettes.
It's mm-hmm. so good. Let's try it.
Yeah, let's try.
Cheers.
Cheers. Yum. Mm.
Yeah, actually it's good.
It's actually good. Quite delicious.
Yeah.
And let it be known, we're recording this on a Monday. Have you all had a rough day?
I did have a rough day. Well, yeah. It wasn't that bad, but CTA was...
Oh, no. That will make it a rough day.
That will make it a rough
Chicago
day.
Chicago CTA will make your good day bad.
Yes.
Yep.
It will make you a real grumpus.
Sometimes we do a CTA listen with an album.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll check out how an album feels on your commute on CTA.
That's like the most... I ever listen to music is on CTA.
Right. Yeah, I was a huge podcast listener on the CTA.
Mm.
It's like all of the Adventure Zone in 6 months.
That's a lot of podcasts. Holy shit.
Should get a rewarding bark.
Yes.
Let's bark when we go to live shows now.
I like when we that. Left the band. Instead of applause, we'll just be in the crowd like, sometimes after a band plays, something I like to do when people are clapping is just yell, good job! So before we get into the album, I have prepared a little game, if you will indulge me for a moment.
Mm.
We are talking about the band Slaughter Beach Dog, and so I've devised a guessing game called Slaughter Beach House or Snoop Dogg. I've got a set of lyrics. I've got several sets of lyrics in front of me from either the death metal band, I think, Slaughter, dream pop band Beach House, or rapper and wine mogul Snoop Dogg.
We almost brought the Snoop Dogg wine here. That was a contender for this episode.
Consider it. Yeah.
Maybe next episode.
No matter what it is.
You should just buy it. You seem very intrigued.
I just think it's funny. It's a big Snoop Dogg face on it.
It's like, yeah, I love wine.
It's just weed in there.
Right. Weed in there. I had an idea.
Dry bud. Shake it out.
The other day, I was smoking in my apartment, and I had an idea that I called weed beer, and it tastes like beer, but it gets you stoned. It's weed beer.
They have that.
No, not beer though. They have like,
oh, it's like
sodas.
Seltzers.
Yeah. Mm. Which we love. But I was like, weed beer. You market it to dads.
Weed
and
beer. It's for your dad.
Let some tea. Anyway, I digress.
I support.
Seamus and Zach, you will be on a team. I will read the lyrics. You will guess Snoop Dogg, Slaughter, or Beach House.
Cool.
Pretty straightforward. There are seven of these. If you get four or more, you'll be best in show.
You'll tell us good job and scratch our ear.
that's on the Patreon. Let's get into it. Lyric number one. They say money is key to end all your woes. That's probably why I love it and can't stand them hoes. I chop trees with G's and take trips overseas and pack a nine all the time. And that's for all my enemies.
I'm just going to go out on a limb here. This reeks of Snoop Dogg.
I'm guessing Mr. Dogg as well.
Yeah.
It's a little dank, you think? A little loud? Mm-hmm. You would be correct. That is Snoop Dogg's Hustle and Ball. Number two. Tender is the night for a broken heart. Who will dry your eyes when it falls apart?
A little too tender for Snoop Dogg.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also scream that in a metal band.
I know. See, like, do you know Slaughter?
No.
I don't either.
I know Beach House pretty well. This is feeling Beach House.
Yeah, I think so too. I'm gonna lock that in. Yeah. Let's lock that in. Beach House.
You're correct. Yeah. It is Beach House.
But you could sing that in like a pig squeal. Mm-hmm. It would probably work.
Yeah. Well, that's like the Beach House song. It's one that goes, tender is the night.
It's so spacey and beautiful.
Yeah, that's like the one. Mm-hmm. But it sounds different when I'm reading it like fucking slam poetry. Next, number three. Before I pay that bitch, I'm like a bossy hog, half dog, half gorilla, bitch, Donkey Kong.
Oh, so here's the twist, is because Sarah usually makes really hard games, and so she's like setting us up to get cozy, and then she's gonna like throw some curveball at us. That's gotta be
Snoop. That's gotta be Snoop.
You're right.
I feel like we'll know when it's Slaughter. Yeah.
That's from Snoop Dogg's The Bidness. Next, number four. Mirror, mirror on the wall, it always tells you that you are the best of all. Maybe you're too blind to see that you're heading for a fall. Yeah.
I'm going to go with Slaughter just because I don't know Slaughter, but this doesn't feel as inspired as Snoop Dogg.
No, not as the lyrical genius.
You're correct. Okay, cool. You haven't gotten score. One wrong yet. Damn. Nice. Okay. Jack of all trades, master of none. Cry all the time because I'm not having fun.
I think this is Slaughter too.
You gotta do the mind games. Would you pit Slaughter back to back?
Yes.
Would I?
And here's why I would say it's Slaughter, because the cadence of both of those ones mm-hmm. sound very similar to me.
Yeah, it doesn't feel Beach House or Snoop Doggy either. Let's do Slaughter.
It was Beach House. Dang. That is their song, Master of None.
Well, we can't be perfect.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. You gotta be humbled. You gotta show them you're human. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or dog. Next.
They're gonna know. They're gonna know I'm not a Snoop Dogg fan.
Hey, real quick. Have we got that dog in us?
I just want to say that this is particularly funny to me because I know that he wanted to name the band just Slaughter Beach.
Yeah.
And yes.
Yeah. But and we're already just riffing so hard on the dog.
I couldn't find the reason for the dog edition. Was it just like a word?
Yeah, it was just a word. It was just because there was already a band called Slaughter in England. Slaughter Beach. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's so just funny. Like, well, comma dog.
Yeah. Dog. Number six. When the evening comes alive, I love to prowl around in the streets. It's the moonlight that controls my mind. Now I've got the power to speak.
I have no idea.
All right, that's a hilarious lyric. That's gotta be Slaughter, I feel like. I'm going all in.
Let's do Slaughter.
You're correct. Okay, cool. You're correct. That's their song, Up All Night. Final, number seven. You've already gotten the majority right, but all the stakes are on this one.
Okay, double or nothing.
Candy paint dripping. Look at them bags. I had to show and brag, because being broke's a drag.
Do you think Snoop is short for something? Snoop Annual.
Snoopathon.
Maybe it's short for Snooper Beach Dog. Snooper Beach Dog.
Like when he got in trouble when he was a kid, his mom was like, Snoopathy Daniel Dog, you get in here.
Don't make me turn this car around, Snoopathy. I never said this was Snoop Dogg.
But we're saying it's Snoop
Dogg. Yeah, you're right. Well, congratulations. You got 6 out of 7 right. I would say you are definitely best in show.
Best in show.
Congratulations. Let's get into the album, shall we?
I listened to this album a whole lot this week.
Yeah, me too.
Same.
I was a big fan of it.
Yeah. Seamus, I would like to hear your background with this album, but also Slaughter Beach Dog, like, in general.
Yeah, for sure. Jake Ewald, who is basically most of Slaughter Beach Dog at most times, was one of the songwriters in Modern Baseball. And so when I was in high school, like, when I was a freshman in high school, the first Modern Baseball, like, LP came out, like, a week before Christmas break or something. Mm-hmm. And my friend, who's still like my best friend to this day, was like, have you heard of this band called Modern Baseball? Uh-huh. And we were like, no. And then it just kind of was like our friendship for like most of high school was like their albums coming out. And then around the time when I graduated high school, they kind of split up and Jake started like experimenting with a new project. And it was very like character based. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a character study album, which was turned into his first Slaughter Beach Dog record. And I sort of just stuck with it. And it's like, I have a very like almost parasocial relationship with like him and his journey, because I feel like we have grown so much.
Yeah.
Like Slaughter Beach Dog, like especially like where it's going now, is like not emo music, you know. Right. It's like not Modern Baseball.
Sure. Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of people who are like, bring back Modern Baseball, and it's like, dude, it's not,
it's
like
its own thing.
Yeah, it's a different thing now.
Yeah.
But and so I feel very similar to that as well, because like I was making like emo type music when I was in high school, and now I'm like, I guess you could describe it as emo, but like I'm really into like folky stuff and like, you know, like indie pop stuff. And like I'm never gonna really go back to being an emo kid, you know.
Yeah.
I just feel like we grew a lot. This album specifically, I think, is the most creative and inspired work that he had put out, partly because I think he was recording it at like the first summer of the pandemic when like no one knew what to really do.
Yeah.
And he just had all his time on his hands to just like dive into it and like have fun, you know, and just like stop when it's done.
Yeah,
that is kind of a unique thing about a lot of the music that was coming out in 2021 and 2020.
Yeah.
It's like, wow, all these artists like have no touring gigs.
Right.
Like
this
they've got
what they've been up to.
They've got time to craft.
Yeah, right.
Because we talked recently, not too recently, about some of the music in One Bit a long time ago from the Great Depression and how that shaped music shortly after.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if in 20, 30 years we'll look back kind of like, oh, this is how this affected music in 2020.
Yeah.
It's like all the artists had lots of time to do good work.
Yeah. And I like this album At the Moonbase came out on Christmas Eve.
Yeah. With zero PR, right?
The only PR that they were doing was on, there was the website atthemoonbase.com. Mm-hmm. And then that was like sort of congruently happening with like Instagram stories. And every day there was like just a post that was little to no information.
Wow.
Like it was the first one, I want to say it was just like a typewriter of these first lyrics of the first track. Are you there? And the lyrics are you there? Did patience wane? Did you fall asleep to your 4-track recording of Range? I think that was like, that was the only thing.
Yeah.
And then for every day up until Christmas Eve, it was just a post. And like, I was just like, this is going to be awesome. Like, this is just going to be so sick.
That's kind of Tumblr, isn't it?
To just post.
Oh, yeah.
To just
post some lyrics.
Yes.
Yeah. Sarah, what are your experience with album and or Modern Baseball?
Very like minimal, which is crazy because I feel like so many people in my life like are really into Modern Baseball.
No, a lot of people into Modern Baseball.
Yeah. And it was just one of those things where I've definitely like heard some of it on fucking like Discover Weekly and whatever, but never like super got into. And we've like talked about some more emo leaning music on this show. So when I saw like, oh, it's the guy from Modern Baseball, I was like, okay, like I thought I knew what to expect going in. And I was so pleasantly surprised. Not that I would have been mad with an emo album, but
have
like
to listen to like whiny sports theme music.
I was just excited that there was like synth and saxophone, and this album was so like tender and like
really tender.
Oh, I just had so much fun, and like it's also like been so nice the past couple days in Chicago. Mm-hmm. This episode's going to come out a couple weeks after we're recording this, but it's been in like the 40s and 50s, so I've just been like walking around in the fucking sunshine listening to this album.
It's good,
and
spring
it's amazing.
Vibes.
Yeah,
it's so
honestly
ideal.
Yeah,
are you a Mobo boy?
I didn't get super into them, but I do like have a couple songs in their discography that I love. Like I just really like Tears Over Beers. I think that's a very witty song by them.
And that's crazy. That's like Jake Ewald's, like one of the first songs that like he wrote, you know?
Oh yeah, right.
And like, yeah, it's just like to the someone to be so good from the get-go.
Yeah. Because that was on sports, right? That was on the first one?
Yeah. Right.
Wow.
So I listened to this album a whole bunch before I did any of the research because I just vibed with it. I think I saw on Spotify that like the Front Bottoms was one of the related artists. And I fuck hard with the Front Bottoms.
Our very first episode.
Really? Yeah. The Front Bottoms.
We did Talent of the Hawk.
Yeah.
DFB.
Yeah.
But yeah, this album's great. I listened to it a whole lot.
It's so fun.
It's good. Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
I can't wait.
Are you there? I'm here. I'm present. I'm clocked in.
I'm there. And I was going to make a Everything Everywhere All at Once reference, but I couldn't do it in time. I folded too quickly.
I got halfway through and I did fall asleep. Oh. That's not a knock on the movie. I was just really sleepy that day.
Did you watch it at home?
Yeah.
That'll do it. I saw it in a theater and it destroyed me.
You know what else destroyed me? This first song.
Yeah. Segue.
I first heard the song, and this is how like crazy I am with Slaughter Beach Dog, is like, this is my artist where like I will look up live videos, you know.
Yeah,
sure.
And he was playing like this acoustic set in some like basement in Philly that he had some association by friends with. Mm-hmm. And someone was recording it and he played some of these new songs, and this was pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. So he had probably just written these songs or had been, you know, playing around with them, and he played this one and I was just like, that's really good.
You're just like, okay.
Yeah. And it was acoustic. And so like kind of like I had this image that it wasn't going to have the energy that it does.
Yeah.
But I love everything about this first song. It's like you're entering into a fresh start or a new world.
Yeah.
And it's like checking in with you almost.
Are you there?
Yeah.
I felt called out pretty quickly by this song. Mm-hmm. Because I do actually genuinely fall asleep listening to 4-track recordings of Rainy.
No. Same, and I did it last night.
I was like, wow. Some of the lyricism on this album like is just so real.
Yeah.
Or maybe I'm saying it's real because it's very relatable like to me. Mm-hmm. But listening to some of it, like the Rain recordings and shit like that, I'm like, do you have like a camera on me? Like, how did you get in my head?
There's a lot of like really, I don't know what word to use, grounding lyrics where he's just like talking about things you can see. Things that you interact with in your apartment, get in the mail. Very real stuff.
Yeah. And I think a big theme for me throughout this whole episode is just like the lyrics are just like, you could take any single line.
Yeah.
Throughout this whole album, and it is a gem.
Oh, like, it's poetry.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Throw a dart.
Yeah.
Did you guys notice the subtle horniness in this one?
I did.
Oh, did this album I notice?
It's a little horny. Zach. Straight up.
I kind of noticed it backwards. Like, I'm listening through, and like I'm at like the last stanza, and I'm like, oh, these other ones are now horny in reference to this one.
I, on the topic of writing that is a bit horny.
Yeah.
I like have a really big appreciation for when people are capable of doing this.
Horny on me.
Artfully. Yeah.
It's like whenever the ballerina can like wear something with her shirt exposed, right? Because they're doing art.
True. It's exactly art.
Crazed with unbuttoning, everything must go. Button-wise.
Yes. Button-wise.
I thought it was so fucking funny. Like, it's horny, it's funny, it's smart.
Yep.
I'm clocked in. I'm here. Hello.
And it, like, those types of lines are just, like, that breaks me apart.
Yes.
Like, the false expectation that there's going to be a rhyme because the same verses previous had a rhyme in it.
Yeah.
And then it just, like, button-wise, like...
Button-wise. He's like, what rhymes with hallways?
Button-wise. Yes. And like, it does not need to.
Right.
And it humanizes that verse.
Sure.
Yeah. Well,
I think maybe helps the horniness a little bit.
Very accessible.
Yeah.
Very accessible horniness.
So then you go back and you read some of the other lyrics, like in a dog breath room. Right? Am I interpreting that correctly?
I'm in my man's ear like...
That's not sexy at all.
Hey, everybody has their own thing.
To you, yeah. That's not sexy.
I did never consider the dog breath part of it being maybe considered a horny lyric, but
horny on me in the opener.
I did notice going through genius.com that it does seem like, I don't know if it was just one person, but there were a lot of notations on this album that were like, this reminds me of my dot, dot, dot. Like, it was just like very personal. First person, like one person. I don't want to say projecting because like that's exactly what I do on this podcast.
I was about to say, I was like, that's all we're doing right
exactly,
now.
Exactly, exactly. But like that was sort of like the vast majority of what was present. Mm-hmm. So take our genius.com annotations with a heaping tablespoon of salt.
Yes.
They're the Wikipedia of lyrics.
Yeah. And we've edited Wikipedia on air. The air. So.
Several times. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. We've also made genius annotations on air. Now that I remember. What do you all think of that song like as an opener? I feel like, and I don't make music. So like as people who make music, I guess what sort of qualifies an opener, or like, why do you think this song was a good fit?
I did know someone who took a songwriting class one time, and they said that
hell yeah,
that asking questions is sometimes kind of a nice way to get the listener engaged.
Oh yeah,
because now they're like, oh, someone like, there's a question.
Yeah,
are you there? Is a really good first line, right?
Yeah,
yeah. I think it opens the door for me. In sort of a question way, but it doesn't like let you see the whole house yet, but it lets you see just the entryway of what the album's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
As a songwriter, I think you just kind of know when it's the beginning. Mm. There is a sense of like, this doesn't close anything. It doesn't really fill anything, but it's sort of like makes me want to continue listening, mm-hmm. or like, you know, continue digging through myself to try to make the songs that come after this first one.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of a weird feeling, but I would like to think that there was maybe just that gut reaction feeling.
When you know, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Nice.
I really liked the outro on this one. Just kind of some ah-ahs into the next tune.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of brings you with it.
Yeah.
Can we play them?
Sure.
So that is Lucy Stone is the vocalist he brought in for that.
Hmm.
I'm assuming not into the studio, probably, because this was a 2020 recording, right?
Yeah. Well, I think a little bit of this was recorded. I think most of it was recorded at home, if I remember correctly. Uh-huh. But then some of it was recorded in studio.
Mm.
The recording was produced at the Metal Shop, which is the studio that he owns.
Mm, cool.
And at home.
Oh, so you could get a private room easy breezy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, I think it's cool that there's like two or three different female voices on this album. And then also listed is Julia Sponsler, listed as spiritual guidance.
Oh.
I think it's nice. That was on the Bandcamp. I don't know if it's in the... And I tried to figure out who that is. And I think it's his therapist.
Hell yes.
I honestly...
Which we are super pro about. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's very open about him doing therapy. So nice. That could be.
Therapy rules.
Yeah.
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 That's awesome.
Yeah.
This album's so
That's
good.
That's cool that it's listed on the Yeah. I don't know that.
If we ever release an album, Zach, we're going to put my therapist on there.
Yeah, we'll put them on there.
Do you understand what has happened to you?
Do you know?
Just in general.
Never.
Yeah.
Often, but mostly never.
This one, like, makes me not understand what has happened to me.
Oh.
It's kind of, like, dreamy and like, dreamscapey.
A little bit.
Let me start.
Sure.
Yeah.
With a rant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that rant is that... I think it is really rare to find vocalists who use every part of their voice.
Mm.
in music. And this is not a bad thing, because I don't even think that I do that very well. But like, there are some people that I can name, and it's a short list that where I'm listening to them, I'm just like, is this the same person? Like,
yeah.
I like Kendrick Lamar, I feel like sometimes I'm listening and I'm like, is this even, like, this voice is weird. Mm-hmm. Bon Iver, like, uses modulation and stuff and has a really high-pitched, beautiful falsetto and then a boomy, like,
yeah,
dark, growly voice. And I feel like this album was Jake Ewald's, like, coming into himself in that way.
Yeah, I listened to the first Slaughter Beach Dog album, and I was like, this is kind of more modern baseball.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
this album is so not the first album, so not modern baseball.
Yeah.
Today I remembered all the things that I'd forgotten. Black mold on the bathroom, haggard bike frames leaned against everything. Brochures on the sill, beaded cotton creeping across the blankets. And I saw you in the dead yard, spray painting haiku on a trash mattress.
I love that lyric.
Your lashes at street cats.
It's such an interesting, like, almost like spoken word delivery.
Yeah, but it's very musical at the same time.
Yeah,
and I really desperately want to write a song that is similar, but I cannot, it does not feel right to me to talk in that. And I don't know how he has figured it out, but it's just, it doesn't feel like he's doing like a spoken word thing necessarily.
Right. Yeah. It feels very chill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a hypothesis.
Go ahead.
And I'm not a musicologist, but I think this might be a thing. Do you know how like a power chord is like a root and a fifth?
Yeah.
And if the melody is going over as major or minor, it can make the power chord feel major or minor, right? That's kind of like a thing that'll happen.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if, because there are some melodic things like the ba 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 happening, that it makes his delivery sound more singy, even though he really is just kind of talking sometimes.
And then it's also like, because it is like, it's not like a delivery with a ton of like pitch variance.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But it is kind of rhythmically delivered, like there's a cadence to it, and there's also like, it's like very artfully written, like spray painting haiku on a trashed mattress, flapping your lashes at street cats, like bars.
Yeah, I know, seriously.
Like, beautiful lyricism.
Yeah, so yeah, it's not like singing by any means, I would say, but it is very like, it makes sense. It just makes sense.
It's just
in this context.
Yeah.
So first time I listened to this album, I was like alone in my apartment on Christmas Eve, and I like had my earbuds in. I was like just looking at the Christmas tree, and I listened to this song and I was very happy, because the first like Slaughter Beach Dog album had this character. Like, I remember I had said that he had written like a lot of character study kind of music for it. He had this character and her name was Annie, and he would like bring her up in so many songs.
Yeah. A couple in this one album too,
right? Yeah. Right. But the last album, the one before At the Moon Base, there was like no mention at all. And he had kind of like in interviews been like, yeah, I'm just like writing mostly about myself now, which was like, okay, yeah, cool. You know, but I was so happy to see that he had like let that character re-enter his writing and like his life and like let it play more.
Yeah.
And it was just like, it was like seeing someone I hadn't seen in a while come back and then have
pal.
Have like a new story. It was
on
fun.
Christmas Eve, no less. Like, that's very magical.
It was really, it was like, it was a strange time, but
it was. Yeah, December 2020 was weird.
Bonkers.
Yeah. I was curious about that. I wasn't sure like to what degree this album was like autobiographical versus more so just like writing songs about like characters. So that's very interesting to hear. I didn't know about the sort of return to form happening.
I think Annie's in this one too.
Now
Annie ended up downstairs with the Tyler dropouts, and this next line's so good. Philosophizing negative space and an inherent value of medical waste.
So good. It's like so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Annie is in here I think a couple times. I think it was nice because I like didn't need that to be a thing. Like, it didn't need his music as Slaughterbeeshog to be like a character study anymore, and he didn't need that either. But I think he also had realized that it was kind of fun to do that and explore with that sometimes if you get stuck with yourself.
Right.
Which we always do.
Yeah. Especially at that point.
Oh, I love. And then inevitably Ava would appear. Ava. Like, they just start singing Ava.
It's so like.
A little musical theater. Right?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you. That's what I was thinking of. It's so easy to like imagine things. Listening to this.
Yeah, it paints a really good, deliberate, and specific picture.
Very specific, yes.
Yeah.
I like the vibe of this one. I like how easy it is to listen to. I feel like this was the first one where it really hit me, like, oh, we're hanging out.
Yeah.
Like, we're having fun. And there are sort of all these, like, lyrics about just kind of being in this apartment, being with these people. Just kind of a very specific scenario. But I love the way that the song ends, where it sort of seems like these characters are moving out of this, like, kind of dingy, gross, like, basement apartment. And they drop their keys in the lockbox. And, like, that's it. That's the song. Yeah. I think that's so smart and, like, just a really interesting sort of bit of, like, word painting. Because that's sort of, like, the end of the era. Yeah. I'm someone who gets very sentimental when I move. Like, I do the last, like walk around, like, dab my eyes, and I leave the keys, and I, like, do one last look. So, I don't know. I really appreciated that.
It was really written from the perspective of someone who's done apartment living.
Totally. Yeah. Totally. Like,
you know about this if you've been in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know about basement apartments with the water stains and memorizing the light switches and
cracked paint flaked off and fat chips on the back seat. Oh, it's just
the garbage bag full of what was it, like, clothes,
t-shirts, swimsuits, old shoes.
That point in the move where you're like, just fucking stuff it in a big bag. Like,
let's get out of here.
Go. Yeah. Our lease is up. We need
to
go.
The new tenants are here already.
They need the keys.
You're like nervous about your deposit.
Yeah.
They have to go in and paint everything white. Like, we need to go. What was your take on the chorus? I'm curious. I like could not really, not that everything needs to like have an exact meaning, but I was just so curious. I was like sort of getting a vibe from the verses. I get in the chorus. I was like thrown for a loop a little bit.
I think it's just like ground your, I mean, like, it's very simple. Like, do you understand what has happened to you? Please write down what you know to be true. Yeah. Like, I think as someone who is like anxious, like that, like grounding yourself in those things, like,
five things you can see, four things you can hear. Like,
And so I think it was partly like that. And that in context with like the dense lyrical information that is given to us, seems like we're witnessing someone who is like sort of maybe freaking out and like seeing everything in the room and like kind of like, okay, and then this thing and then this thing. And then also this person was here. And then like, and then in the chorus is trying to ground, you know, themselves and to be like, write down what you know to be true.
Yeah.
Don't look at your hands.
Don't see how fucking shaky they are right now.
Yeah. Oh, man, because I experience like a little anxiety when I move, right? So maybe a reprise to be like, all right, I know all these things are true. I'm looking at my hands, thinking about my favorite band. and that's kind of mirrored in the ba-ba-ba's, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a nice little meditation. Just da-da-da-da.
Yeah. Just let it go.
Yeah.
Someone on genius.com thought it was amnesia, but I think they're wrong now.
Let's internet bully them.
Yeah, you're called out, person who said it's about amnesia. I think that reading of the lyrics is a little too literal.
Let's go on to My Girl.
Okay, so this was another song that I felt called out, boy. I felt called out boy this morning.
Please explain.
My boyfriend has a better TV than I do.
Yeah, he probably does.
He has a really good TV. And I don't only love him for his TV, but that first lyric, I was like, man. Girls only know one thing. Have boyfriend TV. With better TV.
Drink hot tea and lie.
I thought this song was cute. I thought it was cute. It just felt very like lived in as someone, well, and Zach, you can attest to this as well, but like someone who's been in like a very long-term relationship. I don't know. Something about this like felt really familiar, especially since like me and my boyfriend literally ate Crab Rangoon last night. So like, I was like, oh, yep. Better TV, check. Crab Rangoon, check.
Yeah, it feels very like, I am so used to you
being
around me. And that's like great, you know? Like that's, we're not in each other's way.
Uh-huh.
This is our life.
Right. Yeah. And I saw a couple takes on this song that were like, their love is fading. Like they used to be obsessed with each other, but now they see that they're not compatible anymore or whatever. And I was like, no, I think to me, it just feels like people who are like different from each other, but like used to each other, like you said. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, long term.
Yeah, I think so.
It was comfy.
Yeah. And those are the best parts about relationships, in my opinion, is like when you get to that point where you're just like, you're doing your thing and I'm like, I'm over here doing my thing. And it's like, it's really cool.
Yeah,
like,
it's super really vibes. Cool. Yeah.
This one's also a little bit horny.
Yeah.
A little bit horny. Well, pretty explicitly horny. Like,
there's, I mean, every right Friday night.
And then the next line, I think, is a good pun. I don't know what I would do without her. Because he does her. That might not be what he meant. I think so.
It's a double entendre. It's a double entendre. Because it's like, what would I do if not my girlfriend, but also what would I do? I would be so lost. What would I
have sex with?
This is not going to be a horny episode.
Okay.
It's
too late.
It's too late. Well, I was about to say, like, red wine is
we're 50 barred. Minutes in. We're 50 minutes in and it's been a little horny. We have 30 minutes to save it.
Cameron, I'm so sorry. My girl loves me for my TV. I was like, oh, fuck, I feel called out. Stays in shape on the rowing machine. I was like, oh, not me. Don't use a rowing machine. Every Friday night, we fuck on the floor. Oh, don't relate. My boyfriend works Friday nights. I don't know what I would do without her. Okay, that's cute.
Yeah, it's just like a cute little song.
It's so cute, yeah.
I want to talk about this cool guitar lick. The instrumentation of this whole album is fantastic, which I expected nothing less coming from Modern Baseball, right? But I love the guitar parts and that stuff. But this is
definitely worth mentioning. Jake did like most of the instrumentation for this album.
Yeah.
Save for like
nearly all of it, yeah.
Some sax. I don't know if he played some saxophone or if all the saxophone was played by someone else.
Someone else.
And there was like a synth credit to someone else.
Yeah.
But like he's here.
He's the whole package
over this.
And that's been
so impressive.
That's been the theme of Slaughter Beach Dog since its inception.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Like
a talented guy.
So the only album that wasn't the case was their one previous to At the Moon Vase. But other than that, it has been mostly him playing everything, which is such a like
flex.
That's such a flex. Yeah. And as someone who is like sort of knows how to play a little bit of everything and does a lot of demos of my own music, I'm like, sometimes I'm just like, I can't. Like, you do it. Like, I don't want to do everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially drums for me. How do you feel about drums? Like, the nuance of a well-oiled drummer compared to the drums I can do is vast.
I completely agree with that. And that's kind of interesting with this album because the drums are very simple, but it works.
It works, yeah.
Like, it could probably be a little bit more, you know, like flexy and like riffy and filly, but it doesn't, it's not, and that's great.
Doesn't need to be.
Yeah.
Now,
Zach, so what's this riff?
Oh, that's a
minute. Oh, yeah.
A minute.
Thank you.
I forgot even. Wrote so that for cozy. A girl, man. That's such a good.
I feel like I'm being spooned.
Yeah, I feel nice. Safe.
Spooned.
I'm spooned. Are you? I'm the little spoon when I listen to that.
I'm the freaking teaspoon when I listen.
Oh, to that. Man, yeah.
you're spoon, but you're also like blanket burrito, right?
Yeah.
That's a good riff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
nice. I'm glad we got there.
Yeah. Me too.
Let's talk about Jonathan.
Let's talk about Jonathan.
Jonathan's such like a full name of a name. You know how like some names are full names? But Jonathan is like, that's someone's full name. Like, that's not John.
That's
Jonathan.
Yeah. That is someone's. If you meet someone that goes by Jonathan, they are like.
They mean business.
A certain special time person.
They're like a senator or some shit. Like.
That's powerful name.
Okay, Jonathan.
But it's a very tender song about Jonathan.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think
he's using it kind of like as an endearing way instead of calling him John. Right. Maybe this person doesn't go by John. I don't know. Do you know?
I have no idea.
If this is a real person or fictional.
My intuition is that it's just a name, honestly. Mm. And sometimes when you're writing songs, you need a good name. And
like Peg by Steely Dan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just needed a name.
Or sometimes they'll change, like songwriters will change the name as to not like dox someone.
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I like the song particularly for like the tremolo-y guitar that is just throughout the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, there's kind of like a warmth to it, but also an uneasiness.
Yeah.
Which like, I think pairs well with the opening lyrics of, I think you're wrong. I think about dying just like everyone else. Like that's heavy.
Yeah.
Jonathan, jeez.
Yeah. Jonathan.
He says also, a lot. Go ahead.
The vibe I got from this song was kind of like leveling with your friend who's like freaking out. Being like, nah, dog, I fucking freak out too. Like,
that's
I get it.
Cool. That's cool. Yeah. I never thought about it like that.
Kind of see that in verse 3 where he says, you aren't your name, you aren't your beer cannon anymore than you're my friend.
Yeah. And all this worry does not carry itself. Like, you're holding on to this shit, dog.
Oh,
I saw that and I was good. Like, you that's go to really therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I like this album so much.
I'm glad I brought something.
That was good. That made me like want to listen to the song.
Oh, we hell can, yeah.
Right now.
Let's listen to a little bit. But when you said like the guitar is like really cool but also uneasy, I feel like that really matches the vibe of like talking to your friend about like your shitty brain.
Yeah. Because
it's like, I get you and I'm leveling with you and we're having a moment. And also like, it's really uncomfortable that we both experience this and it sucks really bad.
Jonathan, I think you're wrong. I think about dying just like everyone else. You'd be surprised how often I pull that book off the shelf.
Write down kisses on your pretty little eyes. Do you ever want to give your friends little kisses on their eyelids like this?
Little butterfly kisses with your eyelashes. Just kind of,
good short song. Easy breezy. Track number 5.
Thinking of you.
I loved the saxophone on this one. This one is so freaking delicious.
Yeah.
I love a horn section.
Yeah. I just want to say that like, that's another thing that I really loved about this album is like you said, the first Lottery Shog album was like, okay, this is like, you know, the modern baseball guy went and did a different project.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But like, this is like, we got saxophone on right? here, dude. Like, modern baseball would never
have a tender saxophone solo.
Yeah.
I was looking at the Bandcamp release of this album and like, all of the like, this listener supported it and you like leave a little note. Everyone was like, fuck yeah, saxophone.
Yeah.
Everyone was stoked. And I was really stoked good. Too.
Yeah, that's how I felt too.
Yeah.
That's Will Shade is the saxophone player on this album. And man, oh, they just go to town.
So tasty.
I have a timestamp for you.
Yes, please.
142.
That's really close to the timestamp I had. Nice. I had 145.
I had 145 too.
I shook my head till my headphones fell off. So excited I was for that.
I cannot push you away.
Yeah.
kidding.
It's so good.
I just now heard the double saxophone harmonies. I didn't hear that last couple listens. That's a good choice.
So, so good. And the little like, yeah! I don't think I really like internalized that until just now. That's so sweet.
Such a timeless sound. Like that could have happened 2 years ago, but also like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a really good point. And I feel like that is like part of what maybe he was going for as far as like there's a lot of very Bari type elements to this album that I feel, you know, like you just wandered in and like they're playing sax on stage and like he's like leading the band, you know.
He's working the room. Yeah. Like, Yeah.
One of the songs he like talks to the audience and there's like some clinks. Oh my gosh. And
that's the next one.
That's the next one. Should we get into it?
I freaking love... Talk about horn... Okay, you're right. You're... Look, I'm growing my interest of the hornness of this album that Zach has proposed.
It's the seed I've planted.
Yes.
It is... It's grown, and I've fostered a new appreciation for it.
The seed has germinated.
Yeah. It is budded.
It's literally called a modern lay, which I think is not the chip, ladies and gentlemen.
because we all know they're just called lay.
He is talking about the deed.
What deed? Like you would sign for a property?
Exactly.
This is my favorite song on the album, I think.
It's so good.
This one got so stuck in my head.
And I couldn't find, is it an interpolation of a song? Is he like grabbing a melody of another song? Or is it just so catchy? I think it's just catchy.
It might just be catchy. Yeah. It might just be a really so good song.
I think it was on the Better Yet podcast where he was talking with the host. I think his name's Tim. And he was talking about this song. And I think he like had did a demo for it. And then like him and his wife were like driving home and he was showing the demo and she was like, yeah, I don't get that at all. Like
his wife was not a fan of
that. Yeah. But then he like flushed it entirely out. And then she was like, oh yeah.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah. And like, I think that really shows that like, it is kind of a weird idea.
Yeah.
Like it has these weird kind of like hits in the chorus and like, it's sort of talky, but not talky.
Yeah.
And
it's just a bunch of like meet cutes. Like it's like a bunch of characters. Like right. I loved this.
It's really Billy Joel vibes here.
Yeah.
Like he's at a piano bar.
Yeah. Right.
It's so good. And like the drums in it too, I love especially because this is maybe the most flavor out of the drums on the album. Because they're kind of like a swung like drum beat. That kind of also gives it that old-timey, like, Bari kind of feel.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And it's just, like, the song itself is a character. It's just has, like, so much vibrancy and, like, bounciness. Yeah.
I feel like the character is really exemplified during the bridge where – and I liked how a couple times, like, in the first song, there's the lyric like, is anyone in the audience living in vain?
Right.
Like we get a couple of like fourth wall breaks, which I think is, you know, fun and meta and like can be, you know, when they're used smartly, like a really smart songwriting tactic. But when I was listening to this album for the first time and he got to the bridge in this song where he just starts like talking to the audience, like he's sort of like work in the room. He's like, folks, we're near the end here.
Oh,
it's been
God.
A lovely audience. Like, that's so fun.
It's good.
And you hear clinks of glasses.
Yeah.
It's almost magic. And it's like, who thinks of that?
Right. And the fact that it's like self-produced too. Yeah. Like, it's so like just this realized like idea from right up in here in the cranium.
Yeah.
You look like a $1 million. Like, that's so cute.
And then after that, he says, if you divide that between the 15 of you, well, anyway.
That's a great line. Like,
do you want to know?
Like, it felt really sincere. Like, it didn't feel like he, like, wrote that. It felt like that's something he really said in a bar.
Yeah, could be.
If there were 15 members in this audience,
mm-hmm.
and they all looked like $1 million, and they split the $1 million,
mm-hmm.
What do you think they would receive? I have the number in front of me.
You did the math.
No way.
70,000.
Okay.
I didn't do any mental math. That was just a gut feeling.
Okay.
How much is a million? 100,000?
What?
Right? That's the next one after 100,000? Right? That's no. I mean, like in. Like a hundred.
Sure.
In the next decimal. So 70 is a low ball.
Yeah. 70 is kind of. Well.
How much is a million? A completely different number?
How much is a million? 10?
I would say that 70 is not that much of a low ball. I want to say it's like 64.
Seamus, you were really close. It is $666.67 approximately.
$600?
Oh, wait.
Oh.
60. Oh, my God. Clean
now
take.
Now can't do math.
I literally have it in front of me. 66,000.
Like $1 million doesn't hit like it used to.
Inflation, baby.
Thanks, Joe Biden. $66,666.67 approximately.
Okay,
it's a lot of sixes.
A lot of sixes.
Really satanic. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's still more than I make in a year. Like,
we got to start going to more slaughter peach doggy shows. Get $1 million.
This song was so, like, littered with fun little facts.
Yeah.
I was also looking at the third verse and the drink that is being described with like an absinthe mist and a lemon twist.
Yeah. I know. I kind of wanted to pair
so
some of those.
Cute. Well, we are mixologists. But fun fact, allegedly the cocktail being described is a Sazerac, a close cousin of the Manhattan, which does have, it doesn't say an absinthe mist specifically in the recipe. It says an absinthe wash, which literally means like you swirl it around in the glass and then chuck it.
Just so you get like a hint, like a LaCroix amount of the flavor.
Exactly. So you don't, I don't know,
say
like
the name again of it, a Sazerac?
A Sazerac.
I want to order that.
Isn't that
I want to dress
name?
Nice and order that somewhere.
Let me get a Sazerac.
I want to dress like a wizard.
Yeah.
And then like go up to the bar and the bartender and be like, Sazerac!
Sazerac! And then the Red Sea parts.
Yeah.
And lightning strikes the martini olives.
The lights dim.
The bartender into the lemon.
And they're like, oh my God. Those are my fun facts. Those are my two
Those
fun
are good.
Facts.
Those are great fun facts.
I want to talk about the modern lay real fast before we move on.
Yes, please.
That's,
yeah.
Like, I think what I think it means, right? Explain that to me like I'm 18. You can't explain
God.
It like I'm 5 because.
Well, so the way I sort of interpreted it was, and I really like this chorus. I love empathy makes me a modern lay.
Yeah.
Like, which not everyone is pursuing bedroom partners in this way. But in 2020, I think a lot of people find empathy to be attractive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, wow, you're not a blockhead.
Exactly. So to say, like, I'm good for it because I'm empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fun.
I think it's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's, I mean, 2020 is pretty modern. Like,
I would also think, like, it is sort of a funny way of saying, like, being an emotional person is good. Like, and attractive.
Yes. Uh huh.
You know?
Like, and I also like the sort of departure from, like, if we're going the horny route, like, a lot of songs are like, I've got a perfect butt and a big wiener. And that's what makes me hot in the bedroom. And so, like, to have empathy as a sexually attractive trait.
Yeah.
And, like, a trait that makes you a good person. I was like, yeah.
And you could really tell who was empathetic or not in 2020.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
So I think that's very of its time. I like that line
a
lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Without saying too much about it.
I fucking love that song. Before we go to the title track,
mm-hmm.
I would like to use the restroom.
Okay.
Ooh, good one.
Yeah.
All right, next track, At the Moon Base. More like At the Moon Baseline.
I met her at the moon base. We went for passport
picture.
I forgot the bass doesn't come in for a little bit.
Yeah.
I kind of flubbed that one. Yeah, you should have found a timestamp.
That's all right.
It's a slow burn.
It's a slow burn. It's a slow burn. Wait for it. Dairy. Okay. Also so simple, but so good.
Yeah.
This song is one of my favorites, weirdly. I think it's the best mixed, in my opinion.
Ooh, uh-huh.
Like, everything is popping off in how I would want them to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the best mixed, like, on a production standpoint?
Right.
Yeah. I agree with you there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything sounds really even and full.
Yeah. The stuff that's, like, supposed to come through. I'm doing air quotes. Like, it comes through. The bass line's there. The vocals are there. Like, it sounds really good.
This also has, like, my favorite lyrics. I think this one has the lyric, the pre-dawn blue forever, which is just like...
Yeah, second verse.
Yeah. Oh, I said I love... Yeah, I also had notes about the second verse. I was like, that's an incredible verse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that is like, wow. One in a million type of lyric.
Yeah.
I also really love, with little brown spots of spent rain swept up from the bright black street.
Whoa.
Someone took a creative writing class. Like, someone got an A.
Okay, journal.
In their creative writing. This one also gets a little horny lyrically.
Does it?
Yeah.
It was awkward in the car.
Oh,
it was
true.
Easy it was in the bathroom. Easy in the bathroom.
Man.
True love.
My dude is hornier than I realized.
This is like when we, you listened to the Titus episode, the Damager episode.
Yeah.
But like that album
ended up being really pee-pee
potty. It was really pee-pee potty,
yeah.
And they like, we kind of over the course of the episode, they were like, yeah, and it was pee-pee people here. And with this one, we're like, yeah, it was horny here.
And then like feces, kind of which is like pee-pee poo-poo, but right. It's like educated pee-pee poo-poo.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly, so scientific.
Me and Sarah are just good at recognizing themes.
That's
and you did it, honestly.
But it's also like, so like it's horny, but it's very tasteful.
Very tasteful. Yeah, about it.
Yeah. Very tasteful. Oh, yeah. Very still poetic. Very still like, it's a wink and a nod. I think this album's writing is very cheeky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, and preyed on some pedestrian gravity might pull hard at the end of her cigarette. Like this really track good. Just has like lines that couldn't ever be in any other song ever because he already did it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, you can't.
If someone else were to do it, it's like, well,
did you see at the moon base?
He's using adjectives. Like sometimes, like in writing, let me know how you feel about this, Seamus. Like adjectives can kind of like sound a little too like Dr. Seussy.
Sure.
If you like use them too much. And he's using a lot of adjectives, but they sound fantastic.
Yeah.
Like they sound great. They add value to the lyric.
Yeah.
He's like the big red bike and lace white dress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think that there's a really hard thing with like story writing or like literature where you can get to a point where you're over describing something.
Right.
And then it becomes like, okay, what are you doing? Like, we don't need these words.
We get it.
Yeah.
Sure.
But there are some books that I've read or I guess like, you know, some lyrics that I've heard that I'm just like, that is exactly what I wanted to hear. You know, like it's not like it's trying to
over-explain.
Yeah. It's just like it is what it is, but it just like is precisely what it is.
Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it.
There's nothing to cut.
I am curious about this theme. I am curious about the
moon base. I don't know. There are no other explanations for the title Moonbase. Did you all find any?
So I have a couple things.
Okay.
One of which is that somebody, I think it must have been like an AMA on Reddit, was like, what is Moonbase? And he was like, I'm not going to get into it.
Oh, I kind of like that, actually.
That's real.
I like it, too. second thing is that on the back of this, I'm holding up the vinyl inlet, which has all the lyrics in it. On the back of it is a picture of Jakey while playing the drums, but then there's like a little written piece.
Oh, cool.
On it. And one of the end of the first paragraph of it, it says, this chapter is on Moonbase. Oh. And then he kind of, it's a really artful, I don't know, his writing is just great. Like, it's cool that he added writing to the lyric sheet because I got to taste a little bit about, you know, what he maybe does in his free time that isn't like musical.
Mm-hmm.
But it also like opened that like little window of like, maybe this is Moonbase, because I said it is, but it also wasn't like saying like Moonbase is a place where I've been to one time that like I did this, you know.
These are the geographical coordinates of Moonbase. Yeah.
Right. It's just some good words and that's all you need to know.
Which I don't know. That's like really interesting.
I respect that. And I also, there was like a 21 Pilots lyric where they were like, I'm absolutely not going to elaborate on what it means. So, like, you take that and you make whatever you want out of it. It means to me what it means to me. Just have fun with it. You know, do your own shit with it. So I think, I don't know, it's kind of a cool artistic thing to keep some things shrouded. Not everything needs to be exactly literally explained.
Yeah. And I love that.
Yeah.
Like, he said, like, I'm not going to just, you know, talk about it. And I'm like, okay.
All right,
I'm still curious. Like, don't get me wrong.
Of course.
But I'm like, okay. Yeah. All right.
Moonbase is cool. Moonbase,
but yeah, six drum and bass line in the entire track list.
I also had, it was for this song, the sax outro.
Yeah.
Again, shout out to Will on the sax. This shit was delish,
tasty.
Just live in that,
honestly,
just
like all the time, right? My noggin, that's fine.
Yeah.
I feel incredibly classy.
Yeah,
listening to that.
I feel like a Zatarak
Sauvignon. A Zatarak,
what was it called?
Yeah,
a shamrack.
a Sazerac.
Yeah. You have to have very a Sazerac close in your hand for that, man.
I'm picturing like a smoky bar and you're just like
twirling
your little bev, mm-hmm, and it's very dimly lit.
Yeah, it's tasteful.
Yeah, that's a beautiful,
the saxophone, it's just the right choice.
It's on so warm and like
beautiful little cityscape of music right there, right? Like a little just
I want to listen to that on a plane.
On a plane.
Oh my god,
man.
I'm
going
to be on a plane this week. I need to listen to that on a plane.
I listened to this album on a plane recently.
Where were you going?
I was coming back to Chicago.
That's good.
Mm. Yeah. And honestly, it was amazing because the last two songs were playing right as we were starting to descend and land.
Yes.
And I was just like,
I get that.
Yeah.
I've had a moment like that with, I don't know how familiar you are. So, okay, this was before I moved to Chicago. This was before I lived here, before I went to college. This was probably like 2015. Like, this was a hot minute ago. But I was listening to Walk the Moon's I Can Lift a Car.
Oh my God, yeah.
And there's the lyric about how, like, I hope you like it in Chicago.
No way.
And we were flying over Chicago. And I knew I was going to school here. We were like landing on that song and I was nutting in my seat.
I have a side tangent. This doesn't have to make it into the final cut. I have a running playlist of songs that say Chicago one time.
That's so good.
It's
actually grown a lot in the past year.
Is it public? Can we find it?
Probably.
Link in description.
I will. I need help.
Yeah, yeah.
You can help me.
If you or someone you know knows a song with the word Chicago in it, please send
just
it to
once.
Us.
Just one
once.
Time. Yeah.
Just once.
Just one time.
Yeah.
Please email
albumabrews@gmail.com.
Yeah, I really fell in love with that last bit we did.
Oh, fell in love.
Yeah, here you go.
Zach, sometimes you say it so naturally.
Getting better at it. We've done it 69 times. No, this is episode 60.
This is episode 60.
I have to do this 9 more times before I can make that joke.
Yeah.
That's a disappointment, because it would have been great to have the horniest one.
B69. Is this the horniest one? We've had a couple horny ones.
This one's pretty.
This might this be the horniest.
This one's up there. This one's up there. Definitely like top three, if not the most. Fell in love.
Fell in love.
What is the stomp sound?
I don't know.
In the intro, or the whole song, I think. Let's play it.
Let's and play
see
it.
If anyone knows.
Hey, audience, comment into our subconscious what this is.
I fell in love for the first time again. I kept a secret and called it my friend.
I think it's like Jingle Bells, a combination of Jingle Bells and a tambourine.
Oh, that could be
going
it.
Going like, shh. Yeah. Like, it's a really hard, like there's a lot, but it's kind of sudden, too.
Yeah. The delay on it is, like, non-existent. It's, like, sudden.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he hasn't had any samples yet, so it's probably not a sample. And I know he recorded this at home and a little in the studio. Mm-hmm. Like, did he just grab a chain out of the garage? I couldn't figure it out.
It says, honestly, maybe, because it says Jacob Ewald. And then the instruments that he's credited for on the song, hardware.
Yeah, whoa. I think it's chains.
It's like a wrench or
that's
something.
That's cool. That he's so happy. Sick. I might have been right.
Yeah, that's
oh,
cool.
Oh, shit. That's really cool.
Okay, play it again. Keep going. I want to imagine what other hardware it could be.
Okay.
Touching your arm at the
box of nails.
A box of nails. I think it might really good.
Especially on that last one, you can like hear the rolling of the
nails. Yeah.
Or screws, perhaps. It might have a different timbre.
Jake Ewald, if you're listening,
please let us know.
Please.
Zach is dying. I love this sound. It's so perfect for it. Like a stomp or a tambourine would not have been the same thing.
Yeah. So true. Yeah. Well, I will say that this is maybe my favorite song on the album.
Tell me more.
It's short and sweet. It gets in and out and says all that it needs to. But I feel like he like had the most fun just barfing this out of himself.
Yeah.
Like, it's like just the opening line, I fell in love for the first time again. Like, that is almost as good as falling in love for the first time ever.
Yeah.
And then like, it's just so soft and lullaby-y. Yeah, it's like sensitive and like honest and like I think it's special.
Yeah.
And then also his wife sings on this song too.
Aww.
She sings on a couple of the songs on the album.
That's really sweet.
I don't know where that it's the lyrics "Dreamed a good dream where I drank from your jug" is when she starts singing on it.
Dreamed a good dream where I drank from your jug. Arching your back on the cowhide road.
Horny.
Joyful disgrace, lightning bolts.
I didn't say it.
I think it's sweet.
It's really sweet. It's really sweet.
Just to like imagine that this song was being written for a long time and then like your partner comes over and starts singing it because they just heard it so many times in the process. Like, oh, that almost makes me emotional.
That's so sweet. Yeah. And it just like it's melodically like pretty simple. It just kind of feels like it's just a song that you gotta write.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's so nice. Okay, so we listened to a little bit of it, but a little later, there's like kind of an interesting little changeover that happens. I'm gonna just play it.
Sing. Now here's my son, time boy on the street by the beach. I know sooner or later he'll slip out.
So the first time I heard that, I thought like I like went back because I thought my headphones glitched because of the like, and you know, hearing it now, it just kind of sounds like bells or like you're jingling something. But I thought that the connection with my headphones got interrupted or something.
The hardware. That's probably more hardware, right?
Yeah. But it's interesting that for the last little verse, it kind of picks up like that.
Yeah. I think he talked about it in like somewhere where he was like in the process of making this album, like he got to spend all this time on it because he was, you know, there's nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, yeah, so I just had fun and like did a bunch of arpeggiated pianos because like, why not?
Yeah.
And like, yeah, why not? It's cool. It's
sounds
interesting.
Great.
Yeah. Super fun. Well, folks, we just left award season. And, we saw the Grammys. We saw the Tonys. And we also saw the Oscars.
And the big game.
And
the big game.
The biggest award season show of all.
Sorry, I wanted to tie that in somehow.
The Superb Owl. This is a song for Oscars. The Oscars? No. OSCAR apostrophe S.
The tiny orange fish.
What?
Do you guys know about Oscars?
No.
No one's fish persons here?
No.
They're really ugly little fish, but they get really big.
I'm Googling it.
And so people, they're a popular tank fish. I want some.
This?
Yeah.
That is an ugly fish.
They're cool little guys.
They're interesting. They kind of look like a rock with like little bits of lava peeking through.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Which is
yeah.
pretty sick.
They get like really pretty orange like figures on there when they get big.
Now I have a serious question. And this might be a personal question.
Sure.
Yeah.
Are all of those fish named Oscar?
Yes.
Right.
All, that's why they're called Oscars. Okay. Not Oscar.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
So, if this song's not for fish, it should be.
This song, this is very art school of me. The first verse reminded me so much. Do you know the painting Nighthawks by Edward Hopper? It's that like super famous painting of like the diner on the street corner.
Oh,
and
yeah,
like it's
yeah,
dark
yeah,
out. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to read some of these lyrics. I know I'm kind of like guiding the witness here. Tending to the city's broken heart, little question marks linger over lonely people in the diner after dark, all cooling in their tiny china cups, one great devastated row at the plate glass window.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's the same good. Painting.
That's here the it is. Fucking painting.
That's, yeah.
That's, yeah, that's
really they've good. Got like little coffee cups and shit. And
there's no way they were looking at another painting and writing those lyrics.
I don't know. Well, maybe it's just one of those beautiful things that happens when you write music. When people listen to it, they go, oh, that reminds me of something.
Yeah. Does art imitate life or does art imitate music?
Yes, and also yes.
And also bark.
And also bark. Could you imagine dogs doing this podcast?
You got the little headphones. Wait, you're on. Not a dog?
Headphones on. And a little paw presses record.
It's dogs playing poker, but it's just dogs recording a podcast.
Let's take a drag of a cigarette. Yeah, you're good. Levels are good.
Sorry, let me clean take that real quick. They're checking their little doggy notes.
I really liked the line, and I kind of was hoping we might do a gin and tonic tonight. Now he lives on gin and tonics and studies economics.
Mm.
That was a good rhyme. Yeah,
I'm glad we didn't do a gin and tonic.
Because it's Monday?
No, because we did a vodka tonic for the last episode. Oh, yeah. And I can't drink more tonic water because I fucking don't like tonic water.
No, this one's sweet. I don't really know like what the Oscars mean. I didn't really look too deep into that metaphor.
I just kind of assumed it was like a place.
Yeah, I think it's a bar.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is on par with the
that
sort of
actually
setting.
Checks out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, shall we go forward then to song number 10, Van Morrison?
Which oh I love God. How direct that is. Go ahead,
Seamus. Yeah. This is another one of my favorite songs on the album because of I liked it when I first heard it, but then I liked it when I heard where it came from more.
Yeah.
And I guess he wrote the song soon after a friend of his passed, who was in a band called Three Man Cannon, who is a Philly band, and they're really good. You should check them out, too. And this person who was heavily involved in the scene had passed sort of abruptly, I think. And so he wrote this song sort of right after that, which is heavy.
Yeah.
Especially in the second verse where it's like, Van Morrison, your turn. I'm all thumbs today.
Uh-huh.
Like it's
that he can't write He's invoking Van Morrison.
Yeah, or and I feel that as like there are some days where I'm just like, man, this is someone else, you know.
Do it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, say what I want to hear.
I feel young in a bad way.
That's
like, I cannot do this right now.
Yeah.
The lyric that made me go, oh, the lyric, I get burned out by the good days.
Oh, bitch.
Especially, I mean, I didn't know the context of, like, loss that would have gone into this writing process. So even then, like, that's another layer on top of maybe just, like, not having a great brain.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That hurt so good. I didn't know
that context either. Now I'm like, I don't want to, like, listen to the whole song again. It's just, like, two verses.
Right. It's so,
but he's, like, saying so much now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it almost sounds like it's just, like, a voice memo recording or something, you know?
Yeah.
Van Morrison, your turn. I'm all thumbs today. I feel young in a bad way.
Yeah.
Especially the way that your turn is delivered.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, as someone who has, like, written a song and then did a voice memo recording right after, like, writing it, it sounds like that's what he did.
Mm.
Was just like, it's raw. It's right
at
the center of where it came from. You know, it's newly born. Yeah.
Music's so fucking cool.
I know.
Right? Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, ouch.
It's a great spot in it for the album, too. Right. Next to last.
Yeah. And we made it. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. We made it. Look at us.
Look at us.
Look at us.
Older. Wiser.
Hornier.
An hour and 42 minutes ago. I was not this wise.
No.
Nor this horny.
Nor a little bit drunk on Cabernet Sauvignon.
Yeah. This is a very good red wine.
It's yummy.
It's not too harsh.
Good, yeah.
Just like this album.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey.
Just like this next song.
Just like this next song.
Notes from A Brief Engagement, parentheses, at the Boot and Saddle, end parentheses. Which, I Googled it, the Boot and Saddle is a Philly venue.
Oh. That closed down recently.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It closed down, I think, a little before the album came out.
Hmm.
And so I think it's kind of an homage to, not the venues necessarily, but like venues like that, that were integral to early musician life. Like, they kind of host the little guys and put on your first shows. And so I love that little homage in the title. And this song is like, I love this song because I think of it literally every time I'm about to play a show.
I was curious about that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, what's your Chicago Boot and Saddle? If you're going to pit the name of a venue. This is not sponsored.
We haven't played there like more than one time, but I love Beat Kitchen. It's like when I think of like Chicago venues, like I think of like it's just a nice room. It's big. It's like, I mean, it's big enough and it feels like you are a performer.
They have tater tots.
They have good
tacos.
It's good.
They're good tots. Yeah.
Shout out Beat Kitchen.
Shout out Beat Kitchen.
But yeah, I don't like the bottle. Like, I haven't played there or like, I don't know. Like, there's so many, you could put Boot and Saddle, the name, and like take it out and put it in any venue that you are just like have been a number of times.
Yeah. There's a ton of good ones in Chicago. That was a hard question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really loved the first verse of this song.
Yeah.
Where it really like, it's not necessarily giving like performance anxiety. It's kind of giving like, I've performed before and like this is kind of how I feel when it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I do to sort of alleviate that.
Yeah.
Which is so interesting.
Yeah.
I always wonder like what, because performing is hard. Like getting in front of a crowd is hard. And especially when like the stuff you're performing is like super personal, like that's a very vulnerable place to be. And if you're not like, I know some people are kind of up there like with a persona, and even then that's a challenge. But if you're up there like as you, you really have to like tap into something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad that you picked up on that, because that is how I, like, when I first heard the song, I was like, oh my gosh. Like,
yeah,
I feel that a lot. Like, there's a lot of, I mean, I have just like a lot of anxiety already, but like right before you get up on stage, I'm just like, you know, what can happen? Like, I'm putting my whole self up there, and then like, I'm trusting that I will get on to the other side of it
eventually. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's hard too, which is what I love about the song, is because like, I love to do that, you know, and I love to write songs, but it's so challenging sometimes to be excited about it when I'm scared of it as well.
Yeah.
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 It's tough. It's tough in front of a room full of people. And like, we've done like live shows a couple of times, but I can imagine like when people have like at a winter prom, for example, which is where we saw you for the first time.
At
like,
the Bee Kitchen.
At Bee Kitchen, to sort of like sit through a couple sets already, know that like people have paid some money to be here, people have stuck around, like there's sort of an expectation that you're trying to exceed, if not meet.
Right.
And that's a lot of pressure to put on yourself.
Right.
And I mean, when you think about it, like you are your own worst critic. But also, like, you're your own worst critic because you want to, like, do good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a hard show for me, like, to keep telling myself leading up to it, we can do this, we can do this. Like, we're the last of five bands playing of, like, a really fun theme, like, at Bee Kitchen. And I just had to, like, keep trying to hype myself up that I'm like, no, you're, like, you can do this. Like, you are deserving of getting up there and, like, people want to see you finish it out and win, you know, like they don't want to see you lose at the end of it.
Right.
Yeah. And you totally did.
Thank you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I will say it was so fucking fun.
Literally, you got off the stage and we like tried to find you and give you a sticker to get you on the show. And then now you're on the show because of how good that set was.
I'm so glad you did too. Yeah.
That's well, a thank fun story. You. Yeah. Yeah. That's
yeah. Cool.
Thank you.
That's some real shit. It reminds me of like when we were talking with Nora Marks about a song by Drug Church. It's called Avoidorama. And it was also kind of touching on like feeling weird in the scene and like being super depressed and like feeling really like socially anxious and like not wanting to go to shows. I don't know. I love hearing songs about, again, it's kind of meta, but like being in the scene and having a tough time with it.
Yeah. When you're viewing everybody else do it, it looks easy. And they don't, I know that like a ton of people feel the same way that I do.
Yeah.
We just haven't really talked about it, you know. But there is like this, we got really deep.
We did get really deep. I just was like, whoa, this is kind of real. We were going through the whole thing like, horny.
Where did you get this deep for the song where his friend passed away?
And goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it is real shit.
Yeah, it's real shit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do like the line at the end, the very last line of the album. You know exactly what to do with your hands.
Yes.
The bridge, that bridge he kind of like talks about like getting in the flow, kind of knowing what to do during the music.
Right.
And I kind of like it as a throwback to some of the other songs where he invokes hands, like don't look at your hands.
Yeah.
At the beginning, he's like, shake out your hands.
Yeah.
And now he's like, my hands are good. I think of that scene from Anchorman where he's like, I don't know what to do with my hands.
This, like, if you haven't listened to the song before and you play music, I think you should just listen to it because it like there's a moment in the song in like the second verse where he like goes outside and like he deals with these people like asking for money or something, and he's like, I point to my phone as if the call was a matter of grave importance, and like it's just like a night out that we all have experienced as people who have you know gone to a show, and it has a really special place for me because of that. Yeah
It was such an interesting shift going from an encapsulation of like a night, right? Like a gig, like the first couple verses where he's like anxious at the gig, and like going outside being asked for money.
Rest
like,
in peace.
I like that joke a lot.
Thank you. But the end of the song, kind of threw me for a loop. It felt like this really sweet, I love you most when it seems like you're free.
Yeah.
I dare you to tell me in harrowing detail about how it feels. I am in your palm. I was listening to that and I was fucking swooning.
I am sort of realizing now that I think that he might be talking to himself.
I was just thinking that too.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Now he knows what to do with his hands.
Yeah.
And he's really confident.
Yeah.
In his past, like live shows on his tours, he's been wearing all white, like white shirt and white like jeans.
Oh shit.
And one of the lines in that same verse is, you have enough time. You look good in white. You smoke without aging. Like,
you still love the Stones.
You still love the Stones. Yeah. And I think that's a really cool way to end the album and this
hyping
song.
Yourself up.
That's
yeah.
really cool.
I like that a lot.
Yeah,
a little bit
that's
of
cool.
gassing yourself up.
Yeah.
A little self-love.
And I'm still not over that last line. Just the confidence of knowing exactly what to do with your hands.
Yeah.
Man, that's good confidence.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. Mm.
Man, should we play a little bit of it before
rules.
We do over Brewski?
Yeah.
I love you the most. You have enough time. You look good in white. You smoke without aging. You still love the Stones. You couldn't have one more bite. I love you the most. You look into the camera. You state your name and age. The lights come on. You pause for effect. You know exactly what to do with your hands.
So good.
Yeah. So good. That was like the self-love take, like.
Yeah.
Makes me want to cry.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good.
Well, shit, y'all.
Well, shit, y'all.
We've made it to the... Oh, oh. Moose. Oh. Moose has joined us on the
I'm
couch.
A cat
she's being
whisperer.
Really cute. Yeah, she's really vibing.
We have enough time to do Rabrewski on air. I have one.
Oh, what's that?
Yes.
The Rabrewski for knowing exactly what to do with your hands.
Aw. That's really nice.
That's pretty good. I didn't realize how many hands things there were until you.
We noticed trends. Horniness.
But
hands.
But I think that's a really good award for it because, like, not knowing what to do with your hands is kind of anxious. Like,
right.
I do that when I'm anxious. And this feels like a very, like, sort of overcoming those feelings and being at ease with them or,
yeah.
like, sort of learning about them and. How to live with them.
I think Fair. Also with this being self-produced, it's coming from his hands.
He does know what
it's,
to do with his
yeah.
hands.
Yeah. Wow.
It's very decisive. That's really good.
Wow.
So now we're doing the double entendre. I said that word so wrong.
Entendre.
What is it? Jacka. What is the drink called?
A Sazerac.
A Sazerac.
Give me a Sazerac.
A Sazerac.
So... Give me a Sazerac.
Expecto Patronum.
Be gone.
I would like to award Slaughter Beach Dogs at the Moon Base with the Rubruski for knowing exactly what to do. With your hands.
Woo! I'm going to take it home. Folks, thank you so much for listening to another episode of Album Rebrews. We are Album Rebrews, and we'll continue to be Album Rebrews. I'm saying a lot of Album Rebrews. I'm going to keep saying it. If you want to check us out on Twitter or Instagram, it is at Album Rebrews. And if you want to look at our website, it's www.albumrebrews.com. We have on our website... a Google form you can fill out. It's a guest host submission form, and we'd love to hear from you if you're interested in coming on the show and doing what Seamus just did.
A giant thank you to Cameron Bopp, our editor and songwriter, and just good gosh, good pal.
Yeah. Thanks, Cam.
You can find him on Twitter at CamBopp, B-O-P-P. He is a pee-pee boy. You can hire him to edit your podcast or write a song for you. And go check out his stuff. He's been streaming Elden Ring, and I am a huge fan.
Hey.
Trent, thank you to you for listening, for hanging out with us for 60 episodes.
Goodness gracious.
Our podcast can almost
still?
Get Social Security.
a giant thank you to you, Seamus, for coming on.
Thank you.
If you're in the city and you don't know Disaster Kid, go check them out right now. Disaster Kid Band on Instagram, Disaster Kid on the music internet. Check them out at Sub T March 10th at 6:30 at the Downstairs. They are headlining with openers Emily the Band and Gosh Diggity. I did that really good. I feel like
that was so really good.
I've been working on getting better.
That was really good.
I'm really happy about that. Seamus, anything you want to say to the folks before we say farewell?
Thank you to you too. This was so
good. Okay, I'm glad.
Yeah, this is good.
Yeah, and we have plans for new music very soon. So come out to the show on the 10th or another live show soon to maybe hear what's to come.
You won't regret it.
Do it.
Folks, thank you once again for listening. We'll leave you with this.
Fuck.
Yep.
Wow. Oh, yeah.